This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 2nd of April 2009, and on the line with me today is Jordy Guy with Electronic Frontiers Australia, a non-profit national Australian organization representing internet users concerned with online freedom and rights. Jordy Guy, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Jordy Guy, let's start by finding out more about your background and Electronic Frontiers Australia.
Okay, Electronic Frontiers Australia has, since 1994, been doing the best we can to defend the liberties of Australians online. That's basically our remit. We're pretty active in areas of online censorship, online copyright, and generally we do our best to lobby for sensible and liberal internet policy.
So what is your group comprised of? Is it independent people or is it volunteers?
We're entirely a volunteer-run organisation. We have a board of management currently of nine, of which I'm a member, and we have several hundred financial members upon whom we depend for support.
I see. Well, today on the Corbett Report, we're discussing the proposed mandatory Australian internet filtering system. So why don't you tell us in your own words exactly what is being proposed and who is overseeing this scheme?
Okay, well, that's all kind of changed a little bit recently, but I can put that into some context. Just before the 2007 Australian federal elections, the Labor Party, who was subsequently voted in to government, proposed that ISPs, as part of their cyber safety policy, be required to offer to those who wanted it a filtered internet connection that was free of pornography, violence, etc. Shortly after they were voted into power, that policy did a bit of a flip-flop and became a policy that ISPs would be required to impose on all of Australia, a censorship regime based off a nine-year-long list of websites that were deemed by the Communications Authority here to be prohibited material. In the last couple of days, the Communications Minister, Stephen Conroy, who's overseeing and advocating this approach, has narrowed the scope a bit to a particular category of that material, which is referred to as refused classification material. And he, in the media, tries to spruik the idea that this is entirely child sexual abuse and extreme violence material, but we know that that category is actually quite a bit broader than that, and in a lot of instances isn't even illegal to access offline.
So, for example, I know recently there was some furor among the Australian public over the release of the blacklist on WikiLeaks. Tell us a little bit about the list that's been released and whether that's the actual blacklist itself.
Okay, there was a list leaked a couple of weeks ago now, which was purported at the time to be the ACMA blacklist, the Communications and Media Authority list. Now, at the time, Senator Conroy played this down, saying that while it had some similarities to the list, it seemed to not be the list to him, and we were kind of critical of that. We thought that that was what he would be inclined to say no matter what. A couple of days later, or nearly a week later, another second list was released, which, for all intents and purposes, no one has any reason to believe isn't actually the list. Now, material that is to go onto this list includes MA-rated materials. This is material that goes to free-to-air television that doesn't have a restricted access system approved by the Australian government on it. R material, which you can go see in a cinema if you're an adult, that doesn't have an access restriction system on it, and then there's X material as well, which is only legal to purchase in some states in a shop, but you can of course mail order. So we were very critical of the broad scope of this list, and the government did an awful lot of work to try and play down that this list was anything other than child sexual abuse material, extreme violence, terrorism, etc. When it leaked, we noted as publicly as we could that the list contained completely innocuous material, MySpace profiles, Wikipedia articles, a dentist surgery in a state of Australia, and a school canteen management company, just to name a couple of things that are really about as far away from child sexual abuse material as you could get.
And what was the justification for these things being on the list?
It varied pretty wildly. There was one particular site which was completely innocuous, which the minister said was a technical error, and he kind of expected that to be the end of the debate. I think he might have been a little bit disappointed there. Another one, the minister actually blamed on the Russian mob, stating that organized crime had broken into a website and established it as a repository for child sexual abuse material, and the website had been added to the list as a result of that, and unfortunately never been taken off. The problem with the ACMA blacklist, from our perspective and from a lot of people who are critical of its perspective, is it is officially a government secret. It is completely exempt from freedom of information laws. It's completely exempt from judicial oversight, parliamentary oversight. It's about as close to top secret as you can get. So these poor people that had these businesses on the list, which at the moment is just given to manufacturers of filtering software to include in their own list of things to block, had no idea they were on this list, had no idea if it was possible to get off it, how they would go about that. And I think if they had have attempted it, they would have found that there is no appeals process for getting off this list.
So just to be clear, this blacklist forms the basis for what is being proposed to be an internet filtering system at the ISP level that will be mandatory across the board in Australia that all ISPs will have to comply with and filter out from the feed they send to their customers. And this is currently being tested on a voluntary basis by a number of Australian ISPs?
Yeah, from November 2007 to a couple of days ago, this list was forming the basis, and that's changed in the last couple of days to a part of this list. It may blow back out to the whole list. It may narrow further. We have no idea exactly which direction at any given time the government's going here. There is trials underway at the moment. The trials are currently underway with 6 volunteer internet service providers. And unfortunately, the trials are something of a sham. One of the ISPs, we did a business search on this ISP, a paid search that details company information, and it's actually a husband and wife couple in suburban Sydney. Generally speaking, these ISPs have no residential customers. They only have businesses. The ones that do have residential customers already offer on an opt-in basis a service like this, and are trialing it on an opt-in basis. So there's absolutely no way that relevant negative information or feedback could be the result of these trials. Everyone in the trial either won't opt in, or if they want this type of service, will opt in, and then, of course, only give positive feedback. It's been the subject of a fair bit of mockery from just about every angle.
So basically they're padding the trial so that they can only get what they want out of the results.
Absolutely. There was a bunch of particularly large ISPs that service a pretty heavy portion of the Australian market. Those ISPs, it's been revealed in the last couple of days by the CEOs of these organisations, had attempted to offer the government some methodologies that were a little bit more likely to produce results that you could make decisions off. There was to and froing for quite some time. Those ISPs have now pulled out. Particularly an Australian ISP called iiNet, which is, I believe, the 4th largest in Australia. The 3 largest, by the way, just shunned it outright from the word go. The 4th has pulled out saying, we just can't participate in this sham. We owe an ethical debt to our customers not to participate in such a joke.
Well, let's step back for a moment and examine this from a technical perspective. Technologically speaking, is what the ACMA proposing even really feasible?
No, it's not. The vast majority of occasions where we've seen law enforcement authorities catch people who have been involved in the peddling of child sexual abuse material, it's never been done on the World Wide Web that you and I browse each day. It's always done, like any illicit thing is done, through back channels and private networks and in secret. The filter makes openly no attempt to actually address these types of back channels. And the most common back channel used for this type of material is peer-to-peer material. We know that these types of filtering technologies that they're looking at deploying are completely trivial to circumvent. So, in effect, I guess what the policy is almost on an opt-in basis, that if we spend tens of millions of dollars and assure every parent across the country that their children will be protected by this so they don't need to supervise them anymore, what we will wind up with is people just basically punching holes in the filter and going around it, like we see people doing with the mandatory censorship programs in China. In effect, the entire policy is like having, you know, a portion of a backyard pool fence. If you don't have the totality of it, no matter how much you've got, it's completely and utterly useless.
Well, what can you tell us about the way the general public is receiving this proposal?
Generally speaking, the proposal has very underwhelming support. Within that, we have obviously technologists and people who are really quite tech-savvy who are vitriolically opposed to this. There's been protests in Australian capital cities, there's intense online campaigning, as well as many, many people inundating their local representatives with letters demanding that they act against the policy. Unfortunately, a lot of the members have replied to those with form letters. The protests, despite having hundreds of people in each location, haven't got an awful lot of mainstream media play. As far as the other side of it is concerned, there is some support for the proposal within particular niches of Australian society. Predominantly those niches are fundamentalist Christian organisations, Christian moral ethics organisations who generally feel that Australians ought to be more Christian in their moral ethics, petitioning the government pretty hard and assisting them in the fight to try and get this through.
I understand that the EFA is running a campaign called No Clean Feed and at nocleanfeed.com in opposition to the proposed filtering plan. So tell us more about that campaign and what it's hoping to achieve.
Our campaign, the No Clean Feed campaign, and the name is, I guess, somewhat reminiscent of a similar but optional program that the UK has had for quite some time. It's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. The minister has been referring to it as a clean feed program, I guess hoping to pick up on some of the positive aspects of that program here. We run the website nocleanfeed.com. We also have a lot of material about this on our website, efa.org.au. And the material on both websites aims to do two things. Largely, it proposes to educate people about this policy in a kind of a bullet point fashion. We really do see in a lot of the publicity that this campaign and this issue gets that there's a little bit of a schism between people who use the internet every day and feel themselves technologically competent, and then a flip side of, I guess, what we'd term middle Australians, for want of a better word, who maybe feel a little bit overwhelmed at the technicality of the proposal. So there's a lot of informative information on the nocleanfeed.com website that aims to outline why this is a bad idea, and not just a bad idea for quote-unquote internet people. The other half of the campaign that the public see is the what you can do to get in there and try to help out. Tips for how to write to your local members. There's information on that, and as part of a broader campaign that we engage in with other organisations and individuals about how local members have been responding to the letters they've been getting. We also have information available on a Facebook group, on a Twitter account, so we're mobilizing social media to try and get the message out there as well.
Well, picking up on what you say, I think it's important to stress that this isn't just an internet-only issue. It does seem to speak to something more fundamental. So, in your own words, what can you say about the way that this proposal is really going to affect Australians, not only online civil liberties, but civil liberties in general?
Yeah, it's long been our belief, and it's in particular mine, that the online world is really no different to the offline world. It may be presented in a certain way, but it should be under the same sort of rules and under the same sort of beliefs as the offline world. If we give the government the opportunity to compose a list, whatever that list is and however that list is maintained, of information that people can't see, we're trusting the government now, and we're trusting the government in a year and 5 years and 25 and 100 years' time to never ever use that facility and that infrastructure to hide information from the Australian public with no recourse. Now, already we're seeing, since this has been an issue, that there are Christian ethics organisations, particularly there's a party in Australia called Family First. This is a very religious political party and is headed up by some quite firebrand guys. Already before this has really even been nutted out exactly what is to be blocked from the minister. We're seeing lobbying from these types of organisations about dropping material into the list, such as pro-anorexia material, gambling material, abortion material, and we know that there's already at least two websites on the ACMA blacklist that relate to abortion. So these are very real issues offline as well as on. We're concerned that long term the government will be under a lot of pressure from lobbyists to hide information from the Australian public. And we're already seeing the start of those types of efforts now, so we really feel it's incredibly dangerous to trust the government with this moving forward, or any government.
Well, it's my understanding, and you can correct me if this isn't the case, but it's my understanding that sites will be added to the blacklist based on tips or complaints made by members of the public, which seems to me to indicate that certain lobby groups would be able to perhaps espouse their political agenda by appealing to the regulatory boards.
Absolutely. At the moment, the ACMA blacklist, at the moment, the ACMA blacklist is entirely a complaints-based mechanism. So people fill out anonymously an online web form or can ring up the Australian Communications and Media Authority and explain to them what they found on the internet which offends themselves as a reasonable adult. The legislation that we have around how ACMA actually deals with this is that they can refer the matter to the Australian Classification Board. And the Classification Board will make a determination as to whether this material is MA-rated, R-rated, X-rated, or refused classification. And under those classifications, it makes its way onto the list. What we also see, though, as well as the fact that just anybody with an axe to grind can submit a complaint and hedge their bets, is that the Australian Communications and Media Authority isn't actually obligated to approach the Classification Board at all. Literally, any bureaucrat sitting at their desk in ACMA's office is perfectly capable of just taking a punt on what they think the ACMA, Classification Board would classify it, and it becomes prohibited content and placed on the list just by virtue of that bureaucrat's guess. So we have anyone with an axe to grind, and then someone taking a guess.
Well, it's Kafkaesque in its proportions. Well, Jordy Guy, I also note that you've paid a personal price for espousing your opposition to this plan. News.com.au ran an article on the 5th of February 2009 under the headline, Electronic Frontier's Australia member Jordy Guy receives death threat over web filter plan, that notes a death threat that you received warning you not to continue talking to the media about the plan, which is particularly ironic given that you're advocating a free speech position. So obviously, you've decided not to cave into these cowardly threats, but what can you tell us about your commitment to fighting this plan, and why is it important for you to continue speaking out on this issue?
Well, my wife's been asking me to be quiet now for 9 or 10 years, and when a guy went down to a payphone with 50 cents in his hand to try and intimidate me, that certainly wasn't going to win out of my wife's wishes. It's particularly important for free speech to be an important issue for everybody. The types of bullying and strong-arming into the way that people think and the way that people communicate, and my secret admirer over the phone's a good example of this. It's so important for people in this world to communicate with each other openly, to communicate their feelings, their thoughts. This is the very way that we got out of the caves and put down the clubs millions of years ago. The internet is probably the most acute example of this that mankind has, and this is particularly why it's important to me, why I joined EFA, why I ran for the board, and apparently why I attracted the attentions of this this payphone person. That's why it's important to me, and it's going to take an awful lot more than a threat like that to make me stop.
Well, Mr. Guy, I salute you for your decision to continue fighting on this issue, and I encourage my listeners to take up the cause for themselves and let their voices be heard on this issue, because it's not an issue that we can afford to sit on the fence or remain quiet about, and I certainly hope that they will join you in this cause. So tell people once again how they can find out more info about the EFA and the No Clean Feed campaign.
Well, if they they want to follow EFA underscore Oz on Twitter, we have quite a few Twitter bits of information that go out like that. They can also look us up on Facebook, just doing a search for EFA. If they wanted to head over to efa.org.au, that's our website, which has a lot of reasonably regularly updated information sort of every couple of days about the state of play, and also the specific noCleanFeed.com website has more or less anything that your listeners need to do to get across this campaign, get up to speed and see what they can do to lend a hand. They can join our association, make a donation, or even if they just do something even so simple as to send an email to a politician and say, you know what, I don't think that's okay. It can start there. It can go forward as far as you like. I don't expect people to come home in the evening to their answering machine messages and hear a threat. There's a big spectrum of things you can do. If enough people get behind this, we will defeat it. We're already seeing some shakes in the foundations of the plan. So get informed and then see what you can do to help us out.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with your assessment. If we don't do anything, then it will happen, and if we fight against it, it will fall. So, Jordi Guy, I salute you and your efforts, and thank you for taking the time to talk with us today on the Corbett Report.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me on.